In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
Wake up, Linda! This is Sports Hour with Mitch Moe and Dallin. This is Mitch Moe!
And this is Dallin. I hope she's not napping at this time in the afternoon, evening, Mitch.
She is not home. That's why I felt comfortable doing that, so.
You made sure you're like, she's not going to hear
I'm
this.
Like, her car's not outside. All right, let's do it. All right.
Oh, I love it. Welcome on into the podcast today, folks. It is good to be here. We're recording this on December 14th. Mitch, I have been quarantined in my house for, this is day six. My wife tested positive for COVID. I tested negative. Did not test positive. And for the most part, I honestly have not felt very sick at all. Like I don't know how I got so lucky. My wife was not so lucky. She's been feeling it, doing better now. But yeah, we had to quarantine for, well, we got 10 days. So I think Saturday, Sunday I'm free, but I'm getting a little stir crazy, my friend. I'm not going to lie. It feels good to have something to do this evening, like record this podcast.
Yeah. I tested positive just a little bit over a year ago.
Oh,
actually the weekend after Thanksgiving last year tested positive. I was quarantined. Everyone's symptoms are different. I felt like I had a cold, but I couldn't taste or smell. Some people get the really short end of the stick there and unfortunately have the really bad symptoms, but I understand the stir craziness, man. It took me only about a day and a half and I was going nuts on not knowing what to do. So I feel your pain there, my friend.
Yes. Yeah. It has been good. We're doing all right. You know, the two story townhouse with the extra bedrooms, the extra spaces has helped, you know, instead of being stuck in a little one bedroom apartment, just her and I for 10 days. It has been good, but here we are, Mitch. And I'm excited to do this podcast today because we have quite a bit to get into. We're going to hit on the news, the normal news, the news we always talk about, our Kraken, the NBA storylines. We'll do all that. Campus tour, bowl season is upon us. Friday night are the first bowl games that'll go on for the next couple weeks here. And so we're going to give you a little preview, get into some of the bowl games to watch, as well as get into the transfer portal right now, popping with quarterbacks. A lot of movement in general around college football, but specifically the quarterback position. We're going to break down some of those big names potentially on the move. And then Mitch, week 14 in the NFL, we're just 4 weeks left of the regular season. The playoffs, they're getting closer and closer as things shake out. So we're going to get into a handful of those biggest games from this past week. And as always, our quick pick. So quite a bit in store as always.
A lot on the docket to get into.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump right in, Mitch. We got to start where we always start the podcast.
That's right. Let's break down the headlines of this week in sports. Let's get into the news.
It's back, baby.
You were playing that in your head, weren't you?
It's back, baby. Mitch saw me moving my head like I had Tourette's. It's not Tourette's. I'm just doing the little news intro in my head. Hey, time that out.
Nothing wrong with having Tourette's. Shout out Tourette's.
No, absolutely. No,
shout out Tourette's.
Right. Shout out Tourette's. I don't think you should sound out the disease, maybe the people who suffer from Tourette's.
Shout out Tourette's people. Yep.
Okay. There you go, Mitch. Where are we starting with the news? Let's start with your guy.
Yeah.
Your guy, Bryce Young, winning the Heisman. And what was not a surprise to me. Not a surprise to me. I thought Bryce Young would win. He was kind of the most obvious candidate, especially after what happened in the SEC championship game, putting the points that they did on a Georgia team that had given up like at the most like 17, 13 points in a game. And seeing what Bama and that offense did to that stellar Georgia defense led by Bryce Young, the sophomore from California, he wins the Heisman. Mitch, he's the first Alabama quarterback to win the Heisman, only the fourth Alabama Heisman winner ever. And all those have come in the last 20 years. So a big moment for Bryce Young there. I texted you a picture because I didn't realize, listen, Bryce Young is a smaller guy, not the prototypical NFL
don't
quarterback.
Don't you put him on blast like this.
No. I'm not trying to put him on blast because it's short quarterbacks can succeed in the NFL. We see it today. Some of the best quarterbacks in the league are undersized, if you will. But Bryce Young is not a big guy. I was shocked to see when he's standing next to CJ Stroud, Kenny Pickett, Aiden Hutchinson, those are the other finalists there. Obviously, Aiden Hutchinson, defensive lineman, big guy. He's like 6'5", 6'6". But Pickett's 6'3", Stroud 6'3", 6'4". And Bryce Young looks like a DB. Like he looks like a cornerback standing next to him. It's kind of nuts.
Okay, first of all, I just want Bryce Young to know that I stand with you. And not what this man is trying to do to you right now. Put you on blast. Stand with the short kings. I stand with the short kings in this world.
Listen, go get a short king. Mitch, I was short growing up. I understand what it's like to be short. I was always short.
Yeah, but okay? Now you're not. So
now I'm not. And I get that. I am just saying he was smaller than I expected. He still won the Heisman. He's still a great quarterback. He would be the number one pick in the NFL draft if he was eligible this year. He's not. Well, and he'll be the number one pick in next year's NFL draft. But like that, I mean, he had an incredible season. I was surprised to see that. But again, guys like Russell Wilson, Kyler Murray have helped prove that you don't have to be a certain size to succeed at the highest level. And Bryce Young obviously showing that already in college at Alabama. So he wins the Heisman, Mitch. Aiden Hutchinson finishes second. Kenny Pickett third. CJ Stroud fourth. Will Anderson, the linebacker from Alabama, fifth there. Any other thoughts on the way that all kind of shook out there? Aiden Hutchinson, a defensive player, second in Heisman. That seemed well-deserved.
Yeah, I mean, Bryce Young really dominated this voting. It was not even close as far as the first place points that he deserved or that he had, received. I was a little surprised that Kenny Pickett wasn't second in the voting, though. It seemed like that this was a quarterback's award to lose, and the fact that Aiden Hutchinson got the recognition that, I mean, deservedly, he deserves that recognition. For sure. But it seemed a little bit a surprise that he received that above two other quarterbacks that had outstanding years. But really the final nail in the coffin for Bryce Young wrapping this up was his performance against Georgia. I think if there was any doubt whether it should be Young or Hutchinson or Pickett, it was going to have to be proven in that SEC championship game. And Bryce Young absolutely showed out in that game. So congratulations to Bryce Young. I stand with the short kings and don't listen to what this hater's actually on you.
I'm not trying.
You're a short person hater now forever. Oh my gosh. It's fine.
That I can't believe this.
We all have our flaws, but that's one of yours.
I stand the short kings as well, Mitch. Los chaparitos, they're fine with me. Okay. That's all I'm saying.
Whoa. All right. Excuse you. Bless you.
Mitch, let's talk about it's mock draft season, baby. As the college football season wraps up here, we're going to get into the mock drafts, which obviously NFL draft analysts have been, getting into this for a while now. But one of the most prominent, the ESPN's Todd McShay put out his mock draft 1.0 this week. In fact, I believe, was it this morning, today, Tuesday, the 14th, he put this out. We wanted to react to some of the notable picks here in his mock draft. And let's start at the number one, which is something we've discussed a bit, but there is a new number one in this NFL draft, at least projection. And we talked earlier in the season that about Kayvon Thibodeau, when I brought him up in the players to know before the NFL draft, that he was the presumed number one pick, but it's now Aiden Hutchinson, the Michigan defensive end, the second in the Heisman voting we just talked about. And everybody is on board here. Todd McShay has him number one here. Mel Kiper has him number one. PFF has him number one. The Athletic's Dane Brugler has him number one. Like everybody, the Draft Network, everybody you follow is going to have right now Aiden Hutchinson as the number one pick. And I think, Mitch, I think a lot of that's due to just the dominant season that he's had. He's well deserved of being there, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it, though, has to do with the fact that the Detroit Lions have the projected number one pick in the NFL draft. And Aiden Hutchinson not only plays at Michigan, but he is a Michigan born and raised kid. He's a local kid, stayed in state, played in Arbor. And now with the Detroit Lions, you know, number one pick, the opportunity to draft a hometown hero, the marketing, you know, what that does for you building around a player like that, that is huge. And that would be hard to pass up over a player who's fairly similar in Kayvon Thibodeau. So it makes sense to me that with Detroit at number one, that they're projecting Aiden Hutchinson to be the first pick in this draft. Do you have any thoughts on this? Do you agree? Or what's your thoughts on him being number one over Thibodeau or perhaps anybody else for that matter?
Well, I mean, I agree with you. The narrative is perfect, right? Yeah. The narrative is perfect. He happens to be one of the best, if not the best, defensive player in the draft. He's a born and raised Michigan kid that stayed at home, play at Michigan, and now the Detroit Lions are the number one overall pick. The narrative's perfect. I think he might hold a little bit more value than Kayvon Thibodeau, to be honest with you, because of the health. Kayvon Thibodeau coming off of an injury-laden season where he didn't play a whole lot of games due to injury. Aiden Hutchinson has stayed healthy and put up the greatest defensive season by a defensive end in Michigan history. So everything just seems to line up perfect for Aiden Hutchinson. I have no qualms with him being the number one overall pick. And you know what? It fits something the Detroit Lions need, which is a lot of everything. So you might as well start on the defense. So yeah, this seems like a fine pick and a fine projection for him to go at number one.
For sure. And I think a lot of this will depend on who ultimately ends up with the number one pick, right? Obviously Detroit at 1-11-1 is there right now, but Houston, Jacksonville, both at 2-11, the Jets at 3-10, all of those teams have a shot still at potentially being the number one pick in the NFL draft. And I think that is going to affect maybe to an extent who that player is. Whether it's Hutchinson or just an edge in general like Kayvon Thibodeau, or whether an offensive lineman like Evan Neal becomes the pick because that is the biggest need for a team to shore up the offensive line. I think of Jacksonville and New York in particular, the Jets, who have just invested in young quarterbacks, the chance to solidify your offensive line and protect that young investment, that might be hard to pass up if you are at number one for either of those teams. So we'll see the combine process, pro days, all that will weed out who that number one team is and ultimately or who the number one player is. But it's interesting to see the consensus move clearly over to Aiden Hutchinson. The draft community is sort of in lockstep there that Hutchinson is the guy number one on the board. Definitely. Let's talk about an interesting aspect of this mock draft as well, Mitch. Five quarterbacks projected to go in the first round. That is the same number that we saw in the 2021 NFL draft, Mitch. But the difference this year is that last year we had quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, right? We had all five taken in the first 15 picks of the draft. And Todd McShay's projection, the first quarterback goes off the board at number 12, but all five quarterbacks get selected between the range of 12 and 25. So what he has right now for you listeners, at number 12, he has Kenny Pickett drafted by the Pittsburgh Steelers. 13, Washington takes Matt Corral, the quarterback from Ole Miss. Denver Broncos at 17 take Malik Willis, the quarterback from Liberty. At 19, the New Orleans Saints take Desmond Ridder, the quarterback from Cincinnati, our player to know before the NFL draft last week. And at number 25, the Detroit Lions, with their second pick, take Sam Howell, the quarterback from North Carolina. Mitch, I think this is interesting for a number of reasons. Why the five quarterbacks is a big number, but I think this is going to be pretty accurate. I would expect that the bare minimum three quarterbacks get drafted in the first round, but four, five, definitely possible. And there's names. I mean, like, I think of a guy like Carson Strong, the quarterback from Nevada. He's going to be a borderline late first, second round potential guy. And if a team at the end of the first round falls in love with him, he has a chance to be on this, to join this group of five quarterbacks. Bailey Zappe, the Western Kentucky quarterback who just blew up college football. He's like 57 touchdown passes this year. He could be a late riser depending on how well he does at the Senior Bowl and in that in pre-draft processes. You know, who teams fall in love with is interesting here, but I think this number is not too far off. It is fascinating to me though, the difference here where last year, so many guys right at the top of the board, you could have seen Lance Wilson, Lawrence Fields, any of those guys probably could have been the number one pick in any given year. But this year, we might not see a guy go top 10.
Yeah, I mean, it really is weird how it's just kind of, they seem like they shifted down a little bit in the draft order. Kenny Pickett makes sense, Pitt to Pitt. Last time Pittsburgh Steelers had an opportunity to take a Pitt to Pitt quarterback in this spot, it was Dan Marino. And they balked on that and didn't take Dan Marino.
True.
Matt Corral, fantastic year at Ole Miss. Washington football team. Obviously, Taylor Heineke is doing a good enough job to keep that team afloat, but is the answer? Probably not. They probably need to invest in something future. Denver has all sorts of quarterback issues. Teddy Bridgewater is not the answer there. Malik Willis would be an absolutely great addition. I really like the idea of four quarterbacks going here. I like Desmond Ridder going in the back half of the first round. And I could say that pretty confidently that I think that he will go in the back half of the first round. In fact, I'd be willing to write it down and just stay on that one.
Okay. So you're willing to die on that hill. Ridder goes in the first round.
Let's call this the hill.
Okay.
We're going to call this the hill and you're going to be willing to die on the hill that you stand on.
Okay.
I like Desmond Ridder going in the back half. Now, right now, Todd McShay has him going number 19 to the Saints.
Yes.
That seems about the absolute earliest that he could possibly go. The Saints need a quarterback. They have ton of film on Desmond Ridder, right? I mean, you could find film on him for five years he's played college football?
Or I don't know. Three or four, but he has three solid years as a starter at Cincinnati where he's proven to play at a pretty high level and has only gotten better over the course of his college career.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have plenty of film to get off this guy. This is a guy with a bunch of experience, almost like a predisposed veteran play coming into the league. So I like him going into the early, the back half of the first round. Sam Howell, the slow start at NC at North Carolina. He showed his ability to run the football there towards the end of the year, make us put some plays with his feet, but I'm not sure if he's really a first round caliber, but I'd be willing to bet that Desmond Ridder is the fourth quarterback off the board and he goes in that back half of the first. And I'll die on that hill.
All right. I like it. Put it on. Yeah. I like that. Cause Ridder's an interesting situation. And what's most interesting about all these quarterbacks, Mitch, is I would say right now, the three guys I feel most comfortable being first round picks right now are Pickett, Corral, and Willis. I think those three guys, I'd be surprised if any of those three did not go in the first round. I think Ridder, I think Howell, I think Strong, all those guys have the potential of being first round picks as well. But it's really going, I mean, we are obviously a long way from the draft. We're still 4 months away. And the pre-draft processes are so important. The Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine Bowl, like wherever you end up, that's going to be huge. How you look at the combine, how you measure out. When NFL teams are going to be able to see the 40-yard dash that Malik Willis runs and the three cone and the 20-yard shuttle and all, you know, when they get to see the physical specimen of Malik Willis, is that going to boost him up on boards as teams see the physical potential of a player like that, right? How does he compare when Carson Strong shows off as big of the arm as he has at the combine and those throwing drills, is that going to help him move up boards over other guys like a Josh Allen? So I think there is a lot to sort of be, moved out here. And I think for Ridder's case, physically he's a great player as well. He's an athletic guy. He can move around the pocket. He can pick up yards on the ground. How does he test? How do all these guys test? And then ultimately, you know, the pro days, the interviews, that's what's going to finally separate them. But right now, to see five quarterbacks drafted in the first round, I would not have expected this before the season. But I feel like that's pretty reasonable. 4-5 would be my expectation, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Another position that had a big number, Mitch, was wide receivers. McShay has 6 wide receivers going in his mock draft. You know, the earliest, number 8, Jameson Williams, the wide receiver from Alabama. And the latest, number 31, Treylon Burks, the wide receiver from Arkansas. You've got both the Ohio State wide receivers in there, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, Drake London, and Jahan from USC, and Jahan Dotson from Penn State. So there's a lot of really good wide receivers. And Mitch, this is just another draft class that is just feels like it's loaded at the wide receivers. Now, we might not see, we're not going to see top 10 guys like we did last year with Waddle and Devontae Smith and Jamar Chase. Now, you know, maybe Jameson Williams goes number one. Maybe there's one wide receiver, right, that sneaks into the top 10. And, you know, the year before that, you had the Judy, Lamb, Henry, Ruggs, right? All those guys from 11 to 17, 18, I think it was. Maybe this class is more mid to late round, but we're going to see a large number of wide receivers, and there's one for everybody. Like, whatever tickles your fancy, what type of style you play, do you want a slot guy? Do you want a deep threat? Do you want a, you know, a big red zone guy? Like, what do you want? Precision route runner. Like, there is somebody for everybody. And there might be a lot of wide receivers taken in this first round.
Yeah, I think that this is going to be the new norm in the NFL draft, just with the way that the direction that the league's headed of pass heavy. I think that we're always going to see a slew of wide receivers that are going to be have first round potential. And that's just because of the direction the league is headed. You know, we're headed, you know, we've been headed in this direction, you know, since 2005, where it's, you know, it's a pass first league. Jameson Williams, you mentioned him, Alabama, World Damn Tide. He's going to be one of those guys that might sneak into the top 10. I think he's more talented than John Mechie, who would probably be perceived as the best wide receiver in that core. I think that Jameson Williams is more talented than John Mechie. Tons of talent for him. But yeah, you're right. There is definitely a prototype for anyone who wants to go take them. It seems like every prototype is covered here in the first round.
For sure. And it's going to be another deep position in this upcoming NFL draft. Interesting to see 6 mocked already, but it, you know, definitely could be, you know, it could be that number. It could be more. There's a number of guys that are going to be sort of right on the fence there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. So that's it for the time. We just want to kind of talk about the mock draft a bit, just because it is that time of year. We're going to get more of these as the college football season officially wraps here with bowl season and we get into the pre-draft process.
Yeah, lots to get excited about when it comes to NFL draft season. The mocks are going to start coming out, so you and I will start breaking that down more and more as they come out. Exciting stuff as we get closer to that April NFL draft season. But Dallin, it's time to update a little bit on our boys, the Kraken.
Yes.
Only played 2 games since we last talked about them. Unfortunately, 2 losses. 2 losses, lost 3-0 to the Winnipeg Jets, 5-4 to the Blue Jackets. But we do pick up that overtime point, that overtime loss point in the loss to the Blue Jackets. Right now, the Kraken currently sitting 9-15-3. We are still, well, no, I take that back. We are at the bottom of the Pacific Division again, Dallin. We're in the cellar. I think the Canucks heard me when I told them to screw themselves.
You did. You used
because they've rattled off 4 in a row.
You arguably offended an entire region of another country by saying that.
I didn't mean to be racist. It wasn't a racial slur.
But yes,
they've rattled off 4 in a row since then, and now the Kraken are in the cellar, Dallin.
Yeah, I know. It's tough season. You know, it's good to get the overtime point, right, even though you couldn't pull that game out. And we just talked about how good their offense was. They were scoring goals, you know, pretty consistently. And then they scored 1 against Pittsburgh, got shut out against the Jets, 4 against in that loss to the Blue Jackets, obviously. So hopefully that continues. They play tonight at San Jose, a chance to get double digit wins on the season, 10th win. So, you know, still about they're playing about where they were, you know, they're they're about average right now after a slow start. So we'll see if they can pick it back up. But, you know, we're getting into the doldrums of the season. It's the middle of the season. It's going to get tough. So you got to just gut it out. But we feel good about the guys. Back-to-back games here this week at San Jose and then at Anaheim tonight. And then Wednesday, the 15th.
You know, at least we're not Arizona Coyotes bad where we get locked out of our own stadium.
Exactly. Yeah, our stadium, our lease is fine. We're not going anywhere.
My rent's paid. I pay my bills. My rent's paid.
Exactly. What can you say about that, Coyotes? You shouldn't even be. Why is there hockey in Arizona, Mitch?
They're 5-20. They're 5-20-2. They're garbage.
Yeah.
And they can't pay the rent.
The rent's too damn high, party. That's what they're all about.
The rent is too damn high. It must cost a lot to maintain ice in Arizona.
That's what I'm saying. That seems like a bad business decision to put a hockey team in the desert and then be like, we're going to have to pay to keep it cool here all the time. I don't know.
That's rough.
Mitch, to wrap up the news, let's get into our three NBA storylines. And I want to start with a surprise team from the Western Conference. Right now, they are currently the number four seed in the West. It's the Memphis Grizzlies, Mitch. 17-11 on the season. They've won eight of their last 10. Grizzlies are rolling right now, Mitch. And this was a team that was the number eight seed in the playoffs last year. Stole a game to start that playoff series against the Jazz and then ended up with the gentleman's sweep 4-1. But I said, we talked about that last year and we talked about how good of an experience that was going to be for the Grizzlies moving forward. Just getting into the playoffs, getting a shot, you just getting to that highest stage and stealing a win too, like getting a win on the road. Like that is huge for their confidence and they're playing like it this year. Ja Morant's averaging 24 points, just under 7 assists. He's missed some time this year. But Dylan Brooks is averaging 18 points a game. Jaren Jackson Jr., 16 points a game. How about Desmond Bane, the second year guy? He's averaging 16 points a game right now in 28 minutes. He's playing at a really high level and they're getting those kind of contributions throughout their team, a young roster, but a deep roster. And it's paying off for them right now. Again, 17-11 on the season. They're right now the number four seed, a game up on the Clippers, three games back of the Jazz, Warriors, Phoenix, and the Jazz sort of, you know, the top tier of the West. And then there's another tier, but the Grizzlies are right at the forefront of that. And that's the kind of progress you want to see from a young team like this, who got that taste of the playoffs last year. Now you want to be out of the play-in tournament. You want to secure one of those top six seeds if you're Memphis. And if you could be comfortably in those top six seeds, that is the right kind of progress for a young Memphis team.
Yeah. I mean, a young team that is playing exceptionally well and, it'll be exciting to see when Ja Morant is coming back 100% healthy. We know what kind of player Ja Morant is. He could be the best player out of that draft. So, he's an exciting player to watch. So yeah, Grizzlies off to a hot start and having a multitude of young pieces playing exceptionally well early on.
For sure. Mitch, you wanted to bring up a story that we had history made tonight in the NBA.
History was made tonight.
As we were recording,
Steph Curry has now set the career record for most three-pointers made in a career. He's done this now at, I mean, what is he, 33, 32 years old? I don't know how old he is. It's not old, but he's done this at an exceptionally early record. Now,
he's 33. You were right.
33. He's 33. Okay. So, the baby-faced assassin just continues to change the way that the game is played. Ray Allen was in the building tonight to be there when he set that record. A very classy move, I think, by Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Steph right now is a bigger face of the NBA than LeBron James. I'll say it.
Okay.
I'll say it. I mean, he is a better player. He has a better influence on the way the game is played. He is definitely a less polarizing player. He is, I believe, at least generally liked throughout the league. Steph is playing at an absolute elite level, and he is playing above his career averages throughout the entirety of this year. Steph right now might be the greatest player on the planet when it comes to basketball.
Yeah, I mean, Steph is great. And after the injury in 2019-2020, he only played 5 games. And then last year with just a depleted Warriors roster sort of helped them limp along into the play-in tournament. But it's good to see Steph Curry being Steph Curry again. And we saw it last year when he averaged 32 points a game. This year he's averaging 27 points a game. And the Warriors are, you know, the number one team in the West, I believe. They have the best record in the entire NBA.
22-5.
22-5 right now, a half a game ahead of Phoenix. So, you know, it's great to see this from Steph Curry. Obviously, congrats on, you know, setting the record there. It is nuts, though. In his 13th season, he sets this record, Mitch. And, like, is it unreasonable to think Steph Curry, at his position, his ability to shoot the ball deep, like, dude could play till he's 40 at least? Right? Like, he just has to shoot threes. I mean, to be a Kyle Korver at the end of your career, a JJ Redick, where you play 20 minutes off the bench and all you do is come in and hit threes, like, that will always be available for Steph as long as he wants to play and still can play. Like, that is a fascinating concept, you know, to see how big this record could get. The Ray Allen's mark, by the way, 2,973 career three-pointers. So Curry will obviously be the first to reach 3,000, but, like, can he get to 4? Like, how big is this record when it's all said and done? I'm very fascinated to see.
I mean, we talk about those records that are, like, unbeatable.
Right.
Right. Pete Rose's hit total going to be really hard to beat. He's well over 4,000. Right.
John Stockton's assist total. John Stockton's assist total.
Richard Petty's win total of 200, never right. going to beat.
I don't Steph know about Curry. This one though, Mitch, because Steph, in the modern NBA, like everybody shoots threes. And I like,
but you gotta Steph find is, a, you Steph gotta find a best. Shooter as good as Steph Curry. And he's the greatest. He's the greatest shooter of all time.
Well, I would probably agree with you there, but I just think the volume, it continues to increase, and we could see a point in 10 years where the volume of threes is even higher, and everybody, average shooters, are shooting the three-pointer at the volume of Steph Curry, and some guys even more. So I don't know if we can say yet that this would be unbreakable just with the way that the NBA is trending. Certainly, he is the greatest shooter of all time. I would agree with you there, especially if you're just three-point shooter. He's the greatest three-point shooter of all time, and he will certainly have a large lead in this category. It will be interesting to see sort of how it plays out, but, you know, Steph... one of the GOATs, one of the greatest of all time, continuing to prove it here in his 13th season in the NBA. Mitch, the final little NBA storyline here before we wrap up the news. Wanted to talk about the Atlanta Hawks. This was a team we brought up in the beginning of the season because the Hawks experienced some very early struggles. They started the season 2-8. Trae Young was averaging under 22, 23 points a game. He was really struggling. The new rule that didn't allow you to get to the free throw line so easy seemed to affect players like him, like James Harden, early on in the season. But those players have seemed to figure it out, and Trae Young has definitely been figuring it out. He's playing at a really high level right now. Through 27 games on the season, he's averaging 27 points a game, 9.4 assists. As far as ranks among his peers, he is he's right up there. I think he's top five in scoring, top five in assists so far this season. Trae Young has turned it around, and this team is in a better spot. 13-14, they followed their 2-8 startup with an eight game winning streak, sort of flattened back out since. So the team is still struggling staying healthy. Atlanta obviously made the Eastern Conference Finals last year, and they're trying to repeat that sort of success this year, give themselves another chance to reach the NBA Finals. But it is good to see Trae Young playing back at the level that he was last year, playing at an MVP level, arguably, and helping his team stay afloat. We'll see how much Atlanta can continue to improve. They're certainly going to need to play better from here on out. But encouraging signs for Atlanta, who really did get it off to a really rough start.
I mean, he's playing back at those levels of that 2019-2020 season.
Right.
Where he was an all-star, where he was one of the most impressive players in the bubble. He is playing back at that level now. And it's just good to see a guy bounce back that obviously what he was at the beginning of the year is not who he is as a player. He's been able to bounce back and put together a very, very solid year thus far. Good to see Trae Young back on course.
For sure, Mitch. And right now shooting 39% from three. That is well above his career average of 34%. The highest season total he ever had was in 2019-2020. He averaged 36. So improving from three, I mean, that's a big time improvement for a guy who's already averaging 25 plus points a game, nine assists. Yeah. You know, he's already a fantastic player. He continues to get better, still very young. A lot of potential there and a lot of potential on this Atlanta Hawks team, Mitch. So that's going to do it for the news. It is time to hit the campus tour, Mitch.
Ooh, let's do it.
Campus tour time. And you know where we're going to visit this week? We're going to start this off with the bowl games to watch. We're going to give you a handful of games in the next week that you know, if you get a chance to watch some bowl games, this is where you want to spend your time. And we're going to start, Mitch, with a trip to Orlando to Exploria Stadium for the Tail Greeter Cure Bowl. The Cure Bowl, Mitch.
The Cure Bowl.
The Cure Bowl. Sounds like gerbil. We got Northern Illinois from the MAC, the Huskies, taking on the Chanticleers of Conway, South Carolina, Coastal Carolina. Ranked for most of this season, but upset by App State on the road, dropped them out. They ended the season 10-2. Didn't win the Sun Belt. Actually, didn't have a chance at the championship because of App State. So they end the season 10-2, taking on the 9-4 Northern Illinois Huskies, led by Rocky Lombardi, their quarterback there. The Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina are a really interesting team. There's a number of interesting players to watch. I'll start with their quarterback, Grayson McCall. Mitch McCall this season, 2,500 yards, 23 touchdowns, just three interceptions. Came on the scene as a freshman last year with that great Coastal Carolina team. Has continued to play well. They have a very interesting offensive style. It's a mix, in my opinion, it's a mix of like a triple option, a traditional college triple option, and like an RPO. It's an RPO, but it's like run. It's like RPO options. It's a very interesting concept, and when BYU played them last year, it was really fascinating to watch that on paper. So if you haven't had a chance to watch this team, this should be a fun game because Coastal Carolina is one of those interesting college football stories from the Sun Belt that doesn't get a lot of attention. We don't get to see very often, but you get a chance here in this bowl game to catch the Chanticleers. So, you know, Grayson McCall, that'll be fascinating. I also wanted to bring up here their biggest draft prospect here, the tight end Isaiah Likely. This season had 52 receptions, 816 yards, and 10 touchdowns. He'll be a mid-round pick at tight end, but really he's like a modern tight end, more of like a wide receiver. You split him out, let him work. But a really good athlete and a very interesting player, Isaiah Likely there. So a couple of names to watch for the Chanticleers in this game if you get a chance. But this is one of the games we wanted to highlight here. Northern Illinois, Coastal Carolina. This is on the 17th of December, Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific time kick on ESPN2.
Yeah, Grayson McCall, a extremely efficient passer when he does throw the ball. They don't throw the ball a whole hell of a lot.
Right.
In fact, only 211 attempts this year, but he did complete 73% of those attempts for 23 touchdowns. So very efficient when he is throwing the football. Right now, the line is set at -10.5, Coastal Carolina. I like Coastal Carolina in this game. I don't know enough about them to take the spread, so I'm taking the money line at -420. Give me Coastal Carolina. And you know what? Hell, I'll take the under in this game. I'll take the under at 63.5. So give me the money line at -420, over under at 63.5, Coastal Carolina to win the game.
I like it, Mitch. Yeah. You know, it should be a good game. I would expect Coastal to win too. You mentioned Grayson McCall. He's one of the best, didn't throw it a lot, but, according to PFF, sixth highest graded quarterback, among the, eligible quarterbacks this season in all of college football. So that just
very
shows
good.
You
very
when
talented.
He's asked to do, to operate in that offense, he does it at a very high level. The next game, Mitch, we wanted to bring up. It's my BYU Cougars, the number 13 team in the country, according to the College Football Playoff Committee. The first team out of the New Year's Six, which is a real bummer, obviously, for the Cougars. But would have loved to play in the Fiesta Bowl or the Peach Bowl, potentially. But instead, the Cougars head to Shreveport, Louisiana. That's where we're going on this campus tour. Shreveport, Louisiana, for the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl against UAB, Mitch.
The Blazers.
The Blazers. Yeah, this is an interesting matchup. UAB from the Conference USA, 8-4 this season. They were a solid team. BYU, 10-2. Again, like I said, number 13 in the country. Mitch, what? BYU's favored by 7 in this game?
Yes. Lions set at -7.
-7 for the Cougars. Obviously, I would be taking that if I were you. The good thing for BYU, their relative health has declined over the course of the season. They've been missing a lot of guys, but they're not going to have a lot of the opt-outs. The guys that just say, I'm not playing the bowl game, I got to prepare for the NFL draft. You see that a lot around Power 5 teams and just draft prospects in general who don't want to risk getting injured in the bowl game and mess up their pre-draft processes. But BYU's not going to have anybody opt out of this game. They already traveled to Shreveport. They're all playing, you know, so Tyler Allgeier, the running back who may go to the NFL, may not. He's playing. Like, all these guys are playing. So this is a full strength BYU team. It's going to be tough for the Blazers to overcome here. So look for the BYU to win and definitely cover this -7 here, I think.
Yeah, definitely a shame that BYU gets the Independence Bowl. Yes. Like, I just don't like that at all. They should be getting a higher profile bowl game here.
At least a Power 5 opponent, right? We're talking about the number 13 team in a country. Could they not have played?
Yeah.
Right. Could they not have played a number 23 ranked team somewhere? You know, Clemson, number 23, 21.
Played San Diego State. I mean, nah, they're in the bowl game.
That would have been okay, but like, it would have been better than UAB, that's for sure. It is unfortunate because this BYU team is legit. And again, first team out of the New Year's Six. So they were that close to being in one of the top bowls in the country. Instead, they're playing in Shreveport. This game, by the way, this is December 18th. This is Saturday, 12:30 p.m. kickoff Pacific on ABC. So the players you want to watch for, Tyler Allgeier, likely headed to the NFL, in my opinion. I think he's headed there. I think he'd be wise to head this year. 249 carries, 1,400 yards, 20 touchdowns for Tyler Allgeier. He's tied for the lead among all running backs in college football in rushing touchdowns. And then the quarterback, Jaren Hall, 2,500 passing yards, 20 touchdowns, 5 picks for Hall. The tandem of Hall and Allgeier is legit and should be fun to watch. If you haven't got the chance to catch the Cougars this season, don't miss out here. This should be a good one.
Very good one. I am taking BYU to cover here at -7, though. This team is just way too, I mean, yeah, just not to piss off my co-host, but also BYU also is the far superior team here. They've played a much tougher schedule. And you know what? Even if it's a close game, BYU throughout the entire year won close games very, very well. Absolutely. So I like BYU to cover here -7. The offense is explosive. You've mentioned Tyler Allgeier. This should be a great game, and BYU should win this one handily, in my opinion.
For sure. I just, BYU, after going 10-2 and what is felt like among the program is one of the best in program history. They've never played this many Power 5 opponents. To go 6-1 against Power 5 teams, to go 10-2 after an 11-1 season last year. This has felt like in this program, among this team, as a huge accomplishment. And I could just not see them going to Shreveport and then losing the bowl game to UAB, right? Like ending the season by blowing it in the bowl game. I just couldn't see that happening for this team. I'd be very, very confident about BYU. Mitch, the final game, and you brought up this team already, number 24 ranked San Diego State, the Aztecs, who lost in the Mountain West Championship to Utah State. They will face the Roadrunners of UTSA. Meep, meep. The Roadrunners and the Aztecs. This is going to be taking place the 21st, so next Tuesday, December 21st, 4:30 p.m. Pacific on ESPN, Mitch. This is the Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. in Frisco, Texas.
So we can just call it the Frisco Bowl. We don't have to call it all the other stuff.
No, I mean, the brand sponsorships is what make the bowl names so endearing, right?
Or annoying. I mean,
what? You mean the Union Home Mortgage Gasparilla Bowl doesn't just roll off the tongue for you? Huh?
It doesn't. Not quite. Not quite.
The Military Bowl presented by Periton doesn't just feel right.
That's better, I guess. But
why do we need the presented by? They're the only bowl with presented by. Do they think they're special or something?
I don't know. That's what's this one? The Tropical Smoothie Bowl. It's Tropical Smoothie.
Tropical Smoothie Cafe.
Cafe Bowl.
Frisco Bowl.
Frisco Bowl.
It is the Frisco Bowl.
That's, yeah. See, that's way too many words. Way too many words.
I agree. What about? This is interesting. This is another good one, by the way. We weren't going to talk about this, but Saturday, December 18th, if you want a late game after the BYU game, Utah State, Mountain West champs, Oregon State, the Beavers, good season, 4:30 p.m. ABC at SoFi Stadium. This is the Jimmy Kimmel LA Bowl presented by Stifel.
Oh, my God.
That is just too much.
Jimmy Kimmel has his own bowl? Get out of here. Jimmy Kimmel sucks. I don't like Jimmy Kimmel.
I guess they give their bowls to anybody these days. But I guess...
Go ahead.
Okay, so here... Well, yeah, so let's actually, you know, talk about whatever bowl game we're talking about. UTSA. Oh, yes. Roadrunners. San Diego State.
Jimmy Kimmel Bowl.
This is the players... Ugh. This is what you need to know. Mitch, don't worry about this because we're talking about a much better bowl here. The Tropical Smoothie Cafe Frisco Bowl. And... who you want to watch in this game? So let's talk about what's the line here. We've got minus 2.5 for UTSA, the unranked Roadrunners favored in this game.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this seems fitting. San Diego State's defense has been fantastic, but their offense has been a huge question mark at times. UTSA has been a very prolific offense. And so it seems fitting that UTSA would have the slight edge here in the early lines.
Yeah, it should be a fun match. As you said, a very good Roadrunner offense against a stout defense for the Aztecs, Mitch. The players to watch here, running back Sincere McCormick for UTSA had 298 carries, 1,479 yards, 15 touchdowns. He was fantastic. UTSA played BYU last year. Sincere McCormick was fantastic in that game. Fantastic last year. He's another surprising player. Third team AP All-American, I believe. So he's a legit college running back. Finding his chance at a swan song here in a bowl game against a ranked opponent. So pay attention to McCormick here. Cam Thomas on the other side for the Aztecs. He's a defensive end, potential first round pick at the edge there. So a player to watch, Cameron Thomas. And then also, Mitch, the big guy, the Ray Guy winner, Matt Ariza. He is the punt god. Have you seen this guy?
I've heard of him.
Do you know what he's done? The lore around I've never seen a punter as good as this guy. He is on another freaking level. Every punt goes like 80 yards. It is insane. It is insane to watch him punt the ball. It is weird to be excited about a punter, right?
Hey, punters are people too. Like, I'm all for the brand.
He's also their kicker, by the way. He kicks all their extra points and their field goals. Like, this guy does it all. And he is an incredible punter. Won the Ray Guy this year. So the Aztecs will punt in this game. And you'll get a chance to see this guy get one off the boot. Like, that is must see TV, folks. So you got to tune into this game for that alone, for the punter alone.
I love it.
And the Roadrunners, meet meep, you know.
As far as the betting stuff goes, look, I'm going to take a serious push here. This is going to be a push. I think it's going to be a close game. I like UTSA to win the game. So maybe take the money line at minus 135. But I think it's a push. San Diego State's offense struggles in the big games. I feel like that trend will continue, but the defense has remained stout, and I think that they will hold UTSA to a certain hold them to a certain level. So I like the push on the spread. Give me the money line, and I like the under in this one. Under a 49.5.
Okay. All right, Mitch, that's it for the bowl games to watch this week. Let's have a conversation here a bit. about the college football transfer portal. The NCAA ruled last year, actually before this season, that all college football players have a free transfer year. Before, when the transfer portal first existed, you could transfer, but you had to sit out the next season. You couldn't play at all, no matter whether you were, you know, except for if you were a graduate transfer, you had got your degree already. You could transfer, play one more season, be done. If you were an undergrad transfer, you had to sit out a whole season. Well, with COVID, they waived that temporarily so that teams could move, players could move around to teams that were actually playing. You know, obviously the West Coast, the Pac-12 only played six games. A lot of teams played 12 or 13. So gave players opportunities to play football, but they kept that rule in place. Everybody can transfer once, consequence free, play the very next season. Don't lose eligibility. None of that. If you transfer again, then you'll have to sit out the year unless you're a grad transfer, but it's opened up, Mitch, this wave of players hitting the transfer portal every year.
Free agent-esque.
It is like NFL free agency, but I'd argue it's like worse. It's like, because everybody is a free agent, right? In the NFL, like, you have contracts, guys are locked in for certain years, they can't get out. But like, when everybody has a free eligible year, it feels like it's like everybody is a free agent. And they could go almost anywhere. And we wanted to talk about the quarterback position specifically, because the number of high level quarterbacks, names we're familiar with on the move or in the portal, already have a destination, is fascinating. Let's start with Spencer Rattler, the presumed number one pick in the 2022 draft going into this college football season, lost the job at Oklahoma. Entered the transfer portal, and in a surprising move, he ends up with the Gamecocks in South Carolina, joining former Oklahoma coach Todd Beamer, who will be in his second season with South Carolina. So Spencer Rattler moves to the SEC before the Sooners move to the SEC, and has a shot at redemption here in South Carolina. An interesting fit. I had talked months ago that when he hit the transfer portal, as I expected, that he would end up in Arizona, at either Arizona or Arizona State. And Arizona State was definitely the favorite until Jaden Daniels announced that he was not going to the NFL and would be returning for an extra season in Tempe. And so after Jaden Daniels returned, that job, you know, that quarterback job suddenly did not become readily available for Rattler. And obviously he had to pivot somewhere else. Arizona was a horrible football team this year, so I do not blame him for not wanting to play for the Wildcats. So he goes to a South Carolina team, a 6-6 this year, up and coming, familiar coach here. Interesting fit. I'm curious to see how this works out for Rattler. The SEC will be tough for a quarterback like him, but it could be an interesting spot, Mitch.
Yeah, definitely expected him to go to Arizona State until Jaden Daniels announced that he was going to be coming back for another season. So going to be interesting to see what he does in the SEC, obviously a much more competitive conference. So it's going to be interesting to see how well he fares at SEC level competition.
For sure. Another big name, Mitch, that moved on. This is such an interesting situation. I don't know if you guys are familiar, any of the listeners here, with Quinn Ewers.
Yeah,
he's a quarterback from Texas, South Lake Carroll. That's, you know, in South Lake, Texas, one of the prominent schools. Like, a lot of people went there. I'm pretty sure Clayton Kershaw went there. There's like a ton of professional athletes.
Kershaw and Stafford both went there.
Yeah, like there's a number of athletes in every sport that played at South Lake Carroll. This kid was a perfect recruit, according to 24/7 Sports, a 1.0 five-star recruit, number one recruit in the 2021 class. He declared early as a high schooler, graduated early to enroll in the 2021 class and go to Ohio State. Sat behind CJ Stroud this year, played, I think, only a couple snaps at the most, and entered the transfer portal and is committed to go to Texas, to the Longhorns, to join Steve Sarkisian there. Mitch, this is fascinating because obviously he's a Texas kid who wanted to play in state out of high school, who wanted to do all that. But in the era, once NIL became a thing and Quinn realized how much money he can make, he left Texas, which wouldn't let him get those NIL deals. He went to a school that would allow him to sign NIL deals. He made millions of dollars as the Ohio State quarterback in name, image, likeness deals, and transfers after less than a year and goes right back to Texas. And he's basically right where he was. He was supposed to be a class of 2022 kid. He enrolled early. So here he is now entering Texas in the same class and year that he would have expected to enter Texas had he committed out of high school there. The only difference is that he went to Columbus and made millions of dollars to sit on the bench and do nothing and transfer right to Texas. It's crazy. I think he finessed the system. It's nuts.
Yeah. This is a textbook example of working the NIL system.
Yeah.
Just graduate early, go at 17, make $2 million as Oregon or as Ohio State's third string quarterback, and then go ahead and transfer to wherever the hell you want. He worked the system. So, you know, if the kid can sling it. I mean, my God, he's got an arm. I don't know if you've seen the videos of the tape on him. Mm-hmm. My God, this guy can throw the football. Probably better fit at Texas anyway, because Ohio State loves their running backs. But you know what? he found a way to work the system. And you know what? He's gonna come out the winner in this one, because he's gonna wind up playing where he always wanted to play anyway.
Exactly, and obviously a huge pickup for Sark there at Texas, who will be going to the SEC in a couple years and need. I mean, if you have this kid as the face of your team as you head to your new era in the SEC, that's a good spot to be in. If you're the Longhorns, so big there, Mitch. We just wanted to touch on a couple players that are in the portal. Big name quarterbacks in the portal still haven't necessarily made their move yet, but names to watch here. Let's start with Dylan Gabriel, coming from UCF, coming from the Knights in the transfer portal. Had an official visit at Ole Miss. Lane Kiffin, you know, with the work that he did with Matt Corral this year, obviously it's going to be a popular destination for any of these transfer quarterbacks, but Dylan Gabriel specifically. But a late riser in this, Mitch, is UCLA. Chip Kelly staying at UCLA. And could be bringing in another big time quarterback. DTR Dorian Thompson Robinson was a fantastic college quarterback, but could have been better for the team. Dylan Gabriel's legit and would be a huge pickup for the Bruins. So we'll see where Gabriel ends up. But I think either of those destinations would be a huge upgrade and a great win for Gabriel.
Yeah, yeah, and he's even been a riser since he got out of high school. The pedigree of him has risen since he's left high school and went to UCF. So UCLA getting a great transfer, if that is where he is going to be headed, Dylan Gabriel would be a fantastic addition to that program.
For sure. Another name, Mitch, on the move from the SEC, Bo Nix, the quarterback from Auburn, on the move, longtime starter. For the Tigers, and now will be on the move. An interesting spot to watch is the former home of the guy we just talked about, UCF. Gus Malzahn, obviously fired from Auburn a year ago, now the head coach at UCF, could use a big name to replace the quarterback he's going to lose in Dylan Gabriel. Would be a very clear fit in my mind for Bo Nix to join his former coach in Orlando at UCF. And UCF, a competitive team in the American. Now, Nix won't be around for their move to the Big 12 in a few years, but certainly would be a big move for them to fill that vacancy with another big-time quarterback.
Yeah, someone who's, as opposed to Dylan Gabriel, his value has seemed to drop since he came out of high school. Kind of a surprising move that he would leave Auburn. This is a Auburn family through and through. Bo Nix's father played at Auburn. This is a guy that has a Auburn pedigree. So for him to leave, a very surprising thing, I think. But UCF and Gus Malzahn would be getting a very athletic quarterback with a playmaking ability. And I think that Bo Nix would add that to that program.
For sure, Mitch. Final name here, USC quarterback Keaton Slovis entering the transfer portal. This is not a big surprise. Slovis, as a freshman in 2019, really rose on the scene. His accuracy with the ball was people thought he was an NFL prospect immediately. Last year was not very good. This year, not very good either. Struggled with injuries. The freshman Jackson Dart, quarterback from Utah, same high school as Zach Wilson. He lit it up in the opportunities he had. And now with Lincoln Riley there, Will they go with Dart? Will Lincoln Riley bring in his own quarterback? Clearly, Slovis was on the outside looking in regardless. Would have potentially been an NFL draft pick, but did not have a good enough season to really warrant NFL attention. So here he goes entering the portal, probably hoping for 1 year to get it right, to put some good tape out there so that he can give it a shot at the NFL level. I don't really know what to expect out of Slovis. I think potentially some other Pac-12 schools, some lower end Pac-12 schools that potentially looking for an upgrade, like an Arizona, right? Like a Washington State, perhaps, who's looking for a guy like Slovis. They maybe couldn't get out of high school. He is from Arizona. That's why I bring up the Wildcats there, because a chance to return home to his home state would be interesting. But then you'd also have to look at Mountain West schools, right? Staying in that geographic area, but a San Jose State, right? A UNLV team, schools like that. So we'll see with Slovis. He is an interesting name because that 2019 season put him on the NFL radar, but just hasn't lived up to the hype. Needs another season to get it right. Will be a name to watch here and where he ends up.
Yeah, good opportunity for him to kind of get that one last hurrah, swan song, if you will, to make that last-ditch effort to become a legitimate NFL prospect. So, Keaton Slovis, plenty of options out there. Hopefully, he winds up in a great situation.
For sure. And, Mitch, that'll be it for the transfer portal. Before we wrap up the campus tour here, though, we've got to give our player to know before the NFL draft. Mitch, and to recap the people on who we have – talked about up until this point, Aiden Hutchinson, the edge from Michigan, Malik Willis, quarterback Liberty, Kayvon Thibodeau, edge Oregon, Drake London, wide receiver USC, Kenneth Walker, the third running back, Michigan State, Tyler Linderbaum, center, Iowa, Kenny Pickett, Kenny Heisman, I don't care what anyone says, he's the Heisman in my heart, quarterback Pittsburgh, Devin Lloyd, linebacker Utah, last week it was Desmond Ridder, the quarterback from the playoff bound Cincinnati Bearcats. And now, Mitch, another Bearcat on the opposite side of the ball. This is Ahmad Sauce Gardner, the cornerback for Cincinnati. And Mitch, this is a guy that everybody needs to know. The number one cornerback off the board in this draft is likely going to be Derek Stingley Jr., the junior from LSU, a big time prospect who has been on NFL draft radar since his freshman season in 2019. But Ahmad Sauce Gardner has had a fantastic season for the Bearcats. He's had a fantastic career in Cincinnati. He's put on three solid years of tape. Was one of the best cornerbacks in college football, according to PFF, in 2019, with an 88.0 PFF grade last year, with a fantastic Cincinnati team, 77.5, but this year, 85.8. He's a top 15 cornerback, according to PFF, and a guy who just doesn't get targeted. If you look at his raw stats, Mitch, he just does not get targeted. I believe that he has not given up. It's like over 50 yards receiving in a game when he's targeted this season.
Not only that, he has never given up a touchdown pass in his entire college career.
There you go. That is the guy we're talking about. And say what you want about strength of schedule and who they play in Cincinnati, but the American Athletic Conference, the AAC, is a very good college football conference. And he has played at an extremely high level. And we're including games against Georgia last year in the bowl game, against Notre Dame this year, the number five team in the country. Like, he has played some great competition, and he has been excellent. He's likely cornerback two in the NFL draft. You'd be looking at Sauce Gardner, maybe Kyer Elam, the cornerback from Florida, Andrew Booth Jr., cornerback from Clemson. There's sort of a second tier behind Stingley, but Ahmad Gardner could have the argument to be a top 15 player, top 20 player, cornerback two in this draft. And I'm very excited, Mitch. I am very excited for this matchup that he's going to have with Jamison Williams, the wide receiver from Alabama. Because Gardner and Jamison, like, I mean, we talk about this guy, doesn't get targeted, doesn't get attacked, holds up his side of the bargain every time, and he's going to go against arguably the best wide receiver in all of college football, and the Heisman winner at quarterback challenging him throughout the game. That is going to be a fun matchup. That is going to be so much fun to watch. I cannot wait.
Yeah, that could have serious implications on where he goes. Like,
I mean, a performance. Yeah, exactly. A performance at corner against Jamison Williams could make him a top 10 pick. It could catapult him into the top 10 if he puts a performance like that, because quarterback is a valuable position. And we see multiple corners drafted in the top 10 every single year. So it would, like a big time performance, you are absolutely right. It could be the difference between him being a first round pick and a top 12 pick. And that would be huge for a guy like him coming out of Cincinnati.
Yeah. I mean, how well do you play against elite talent? And it, you know, right now, Jameson Williams is elite talent at the college ranks. So how well do you stack up? One of those guys, Richard Sherman-esque, where you just don't throw to his side because you know that there's going to be some sort of Richard Sherman in his prime. Let me just clarify here. Richard Sherman in his prime. You just don't throw to that side because you know that it is locked down every time. Ahmad Gardner, Sauce Gardner. By the
great
way,
nickname
great,
too.
Great
I mean,
nickname.
Like,
great
come on,
nickname.
Sauce Gardner. How could you pass that guy up? Like,
great
I mean,
nickname.
Come on.
Anything, that adds two or three spots to his draft grade just on the nickname.
Bumps him up for me, Mitch. And you brought up Richard Sherman. I love that comp because size 6'3", 200. So he is a big corner, right? Yeah. Derek Stingley, he's not a small guy, but he's going to be your more prototypical 6'6", 1, you know, 200 something pounds, maybe under 200 there. But you know, Sauce is, he's got a size to him and a physicality. And for him, you know, we talk about pre-draft prospect with the process with the quarterbacks, right? How these guys will, you know, elevate themselves in the pre-draft process, the testing numbers. That's going to be big for Sauce Gardner as well. Getting to the combine, getting to these postseason bowls, showing off his athleticism, how he tests against others will be big for him come draft time. But definitely a player to watch, definitely a matchup to watch in that semifinal, Sauce Gardner against Jameson Williams. But he is the player to watch. Another Bearcat, and there's more, Mitch. I mean, we can talk about the other corner, Kobe Bryant. We could talk about the defensive end, Myjai Sanders. I mean, Cincinnati, they're a group of five team, but they have some legitimate NFL talent on this team. Guys that are going to be featured in the top 100 of the NFL draft as much as almost any other school out there. I mean, so this is a legit team and Sauce, a legit player and a legit nickname.
Yeah, be saucy. Be saucy if you can say so.
Absolutely, Mitch. Well, that's going to do it for the campus tour. We're going to take a quick break here and hit a mid-roll. And when we come back, we're going to get into week 14 of the NFL, some of the biggest games with the biggest playoff implications, and as always, our quick picks. So stick around, and we'll be right back. Thanks for checking out the Sports Hour today. We appreciate you wherever you're listening, but if you haven't already, we recommend you check us out and give us a listen on Anchor.
Anchor allows us to provide the best product to you. You can go support the Sports Hour and become a permanent part of the show, like my saint of a mother, Sammy, and my father, David, did.
You can even leave us voice messages with your thoughts and opinions that we can use on the show. Prove to us that you know better than me and Mitchmo.
Moral of the story, people, be more like Sammy and David. Go find us at anchor.fm/thesportshour, guys, and become a part of the conversation. What the hell are you waiting for? Welcome back into the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo and Dallin. We've covered the news. We've covered our campus tour. It's time to get into the NFL. We have some serious playoff implications coming up because playoffs are coming up quick here. And we just wrapped up our week 14 in the NFL. And we got some games that have some serious implications. Why did I say it like that? implications as far as playoff goes. Dallin, I can't speak anymore.
You're just so excited to talk about these games. You're like, I don't know if it's implications or implications.
That has to be it.
I love it. Mitch, well, let's start in the NFC East with the Cowboys and the football team. The Cowboys survived a late push by the football team to earn the 27-20 win. Mitch, we want to talk about this game because the implications on the NFC East here, the Cowboys have all but wrapped up this division. They haven't clinched it officially yet. 4 weeks to go, and they have a 3-game lead over both Washington and Philadelphia, who are both at 6-7, Dallas at 9-4. So 3-game lead with 4 games left. We could basically say that Dallas has wrapped up this NFC East race, which coming into this week was just 2 games, right? If Washington wins this game against Dallas, they would have been just a game back of the Cowboys for the division, and the race would still be very much wide open. But Dallas getting the win against the football team all but cements that for the Cowboys, who go to 9-4 on the season. It wasn't a great game for the Cowboys offense, but a solid performance by the defense, which continues to improve this year. Been very impressed by this Cowboys defense. The offense, you know, two turnovers, two interceptions by Dak, but the defense forced four turnovers by the football team, controlled the clock and get away with the victory. So Mitch, for Dallas here, they can kind of rest easy here for the last couple of weeks, knowing they just get one or two more wins and they'll wrap up the NFC East. Obviously, they're still in it, just a game back of getting that bye week and a favorable schedule with the Giants, the football team, the Cardinals, and then the Eagles that final week left. So you take it, you take care of your own division and a head to head against a team ahead of you. I mean, Dallas is not out of it of being the number one seed in the NFC.
Yeah, we've seen Dallas do this before, though. They take the big lead, and then they, for some reason, take the foot off the gas. And they have some sort of late season, you know, implosion, and they wind up either a wild card or out of the playoffs. So if I'm the Dallas Cowboys, I'm not letting my foot off the gas. I'm looking to go 13-4.
Of course.
Right? I mean, I think any team would, but, you know, there's no reason to put it on cruise control right now. Washington almost came back against you there in the fourth quarter. I think they kind of got lucky that Taylor Heineke didn't continue to play that game and Kyle Allen had to play the rest of that game. Mike McCarthy should be absolutely breathing sighs of relief for him guaranteeing a win last week against Washington. That was just a foolish thing to say, especially when Washington was, you know, kind of a team on the rise. They have kind of turned the corner a little bit, found their identity, and they are playing much better football. But you're right. I think we can almost wrap this up for the Cowboys if they don't lift the foot off the gas.
Sure.
Because all they have to do is go 3-1 or 1-3, and Washington go 3-1 in the last four games, and now they're tied in the division. So you cannot let off right now. Dallas has to stay on the gas pedal.
Sure. I mean, the Cowboys are 3-0 against the NFC East already this season, and they have three of their last four games remaining in the division. So obviously, like, another win or two in the division and you've got it. And then again, like, with those three games and then the Cardinals, January 2nd, that's week 17, with the Cardinals matchup at 10-3. But, like, I mean, again, you win out, you win your division games, you beat the Cardinals, you're 13-4, and you could have a legitimate shot at the number one seed in that bye first week of the playoffs, which would be big. So yes, don't want to take the foot off the gas if you're the Cowboys with what they have at stake, but they don't necessarily need to sweat the NFC East right now. On the other side, Mitch, for Washington, despite the loss, the football team are still in the playoff picture right now. They are the projected number 7 seed in the playoffs. If it ended right now, they're at 6-7, tied with four other teams at 6-7 for that final playoff spot. That includes the division rival Philadelphia Eagles, the Minnesota Vikings, the Atlanta Falcons, and the New Orleans Saints. So for Washington, despite the loss, still moving in the right direction. As you mentioned, they were winners of four straight before that loss to the Cowboys. Heineke got banged up in this game. Kyle Allen had to finish it out. It seems optimistic that Heineke's injury isn't going to keep him out for the rest of the season, but how healthy is he? A big game against the Eagles this week. All of the games remaining for Washington, by the way, against the division, at Philadelphia, at Dallas, home against Philadelphia, and then at the Giants. So Washington, you want to be in, you got to take care of business against your division. And that opportunity is ahead for them. So they are not out of it. The health of Taylor Heineke is going to be big, in my opinion, just because Kyle Allen, I don't think he's going to help them close down the stretch. So it's, you know, it's going to be tough sledding, but the opportunity is there for Washington. They've put themselves in that position.
Yeah. You knew all too much about Kyle Allen quarterback play, don't you?
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah. Listen, it looked really good for a couple games there, not going to lie. And then things got real, and that's just kind of how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, Taylor Heineke, you know, he's, I think what we found out about him is he'd be a great backup. He's a great placeholder. He's
an absolutely great backup.
He's a little bit of a playmaker. Like he's kind of a balls out type of guy that can make a play when you need to make a play. So he's going to be really important to be healthy for Washington down the stretch. If he's banged up down the stretch, that really doesn't look good for Washington, though, because, you know, they kind of need, as weird as that sounds, they need Taylor Heinicke to be healthy to be successful.
Yeah.
But, you know, they actually really do, because the defense can play up to par of what we thought they were going to be at the beginning of the season, which they have been.
It certainly in improved recent week. After a rough start. Yes.
But with Kyle Allen under center, that just does not add up and equate to any sort of success. So, And a statement I never thought I would say, Washington needs Taylor Heinicke to be healthy for them to be successful and make a playoff run here.
Yeah, it is a weird spot to be in, Mitch, but that's where they're at this point of the season. Let's talk about another great divisional matchup from Sunday. Ravens and the Browns. Cleveland gets the win here at home, 24-22. Lamar Jackson bounced out of this game early with an ankle injury. He seems to be they're kind of hesitant on what they're ruling it yet. It's not like season ending, but he's certainly hindered at this point. And with Lamar Jackson, his skill set, obviously an ankle, not the type of injury you want to be dealing with here. So we'll talk about the long-term implications for Baltimore in a second. But for Cleveland, Mitch, this was a Browns team that entered this game at 6-6. And had really been reeling. You know, Baker Mayfield's been playing hurt. They haven't played particularly well, been pretty up and down throughout this season. Yes, this came against the backup in Tyler Huntley and just a generally banged up Baltimore team. But this was a must win for Cleveland. And the Browns getting this win set themselves up in a position to remain in this playoff race. They are only a game back of the Ravens in the division at 7-6, tied with the Bengals at 7-6. The Steelers are just a half a game back of them at 6-6-1. So the AFC North wide open still. Browns very much in the playoff race still, despite these injuries. Kareem Hunt went down in this game as well. So, you know, injuries on both sides, but Cleveland staying alive. Tough last four games remaining for the Browns, but they're keeping their playoff hopes alive in a very important win on Sunday.
Yeah, a must win. A must win for the Browns. You know, obviously them not having the two-headed monster in the backfield is going to be detrimental to them. That's kind of been their MO for the last 2 years, is to them having a healthy Nick Chubb and healthy Kareem Hunt. With them only having one, that definitely changes their game plan. So, Browns very much in this, but, you know, I think there are some other teams in that division that you could look at to have a little bit more success than the Cleveland Browns. Is moving over to the Ravens. Tyler Huntley hasn't played that bad in his two stints in Baltimore.
He played, I mean, for coming in as a backup, he played really well on Sunday.
And he's played well. I forget what game they played where he started.
Yes, earlier this season. Maybe it was the Lions, Broncos, one of those games. But yes, he started earlier this season for Lamar.
Yeah, that might have been the Bears game, now that I think about it. But nonetheless, staying on track here, Tyler Huntley has played well when he's been asked to play. As dynamic and important as Lamar is to that offense, Tyler Huntley does a pretty good job at filling in. And I think that if he's going to be a little bit of a long-term answer here with Lamar being on the bench, being out of commission, Tyler Huntley might not be a bad option to have. And he could lead this team to if not a division title, at least a wild card spot.
Yeah. You know, it will be interesting to see, Mitch. My worry here, it's not about Huntley. It's just about the rest of the team. I mean, Marlon Humphrey's out for the season. The defense is banged up. The offense is banged up. I mean, Devontae Freeman is the running back. He was 13-64. Like, the run game isn't been great. And if you're not going to have Lamar Jackson helping in the run game and you're relying on Devontae Freeman and Latavius Murray, I don't feel confident in the second year guy, Tyler Huntley, an undrafted rookie out of Utah. He has done great, and he's played valiantly, as great as you can coming off the bench. You know, if he gets the start this week with a full week of prep, you know, maybe things will be different, but he's going to need help from his team. Going to need help from his team for the Ravens to stay afloat there. They are a game up in the division, but their final four games there against the Packers this week, Bengals at Cincinnati the next week, home against the Rams, and then home against the Steelers to wrap it up. So the schedule does not get any easier for the Ravens, and they might be relying on, as you said, Tyler Huntley for the last little stretch here. So they're gonna need wins to stay ahead here, as that whole division was within a game and a half of each other, the AFC North. So a division race to watch as this season winds down. Mitch, an interconference matchup here. One of the best games from this past week. The Bills and the Bucks. Tom Brady and the Bucks get it done in overtime. 33-27. Tampa Bay led early in this game, 24-3 at halftime. But Josh Allen and the Bills made their way back in this game. Made it a game, sent it to overtime. Tom Brady and the Bucks get it done. Let's talk about the Bills here, Mitch. Because Buffalo is 7-6. And they are two games back in their division of the Patriots with just four games left. The Bills are not trending in the right direction. They threw the ball 54 times in this game. Josh Allen ran the ball 12 times. In the entire first half, they didn't attempt an actual run play. It was either a pass or a Josh Allen scramble. Like, when you cannot even run the ball once in an entire half of football, like, I understand the modern day that we live in, passing offense is so big, but you have to be able to set up the pass with the run. You have to be able to run the ball to some extent to be a good football team. And right now, this Buffalo Bills team is not a good football team. They were running the ball well early in the season. We praised them for it. They had figured that out. That was the weakness last year, and they had turned it around. They were running the ball at a high level. But they've lost three of their last four. Losses coming to the Colts, the Patriots, the Bucks. They beat the Saints, but 7-6, Mitch, again, two games back. They're going to get a shot at the Patriots. And the rest of the schedule outside of the Patriots, they're home against the Panthers, home against the Falcons, home against the Jets. All those December, January games in Buffalo against some NFC South teams, like that, that's favorable right there. So Buffalo should be able to get to 10-7, be a playoff team, but they might be out of it as far as the division goes. That head-to-head in Foxborough is going to be huge there on December 26th, but Buffalo not going the right direction, Mitch. You had them winning the Super Bowl. Did you not? What is going on? Seahawks, Bills, are you cursed? What have you done to these teams?
I might be cursed. Look, the NFL has exposed the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
They can't run the football. That you could look at the statistic, you know, 4 for 52, 13 yards a carry for Devin Singletary this last week, but that doesn't show me anything. That's four carries. That's such a small sample size. You can't take anything away from that. Josh Allen had to carry the ball 12 for 109. And you, like you said, they didn't actually make an actual rush attempt in the second half.
In the first half.
Yeah. Or the first half, excuse me. This team cannot run the football. And, you know, that's not sustainable going forward into the playoffs. You have to be able to run the football. You have to be able to play good defense. Bills can play defense. They cannot run the football. So they're missing half the equation here. And it doesn't look good for the Buffalo Bills unless they figure this out. I might be cursed. I may have cursed the Buffalo Bills. Screw the four Super Bowl losses. Screw wide right. Or wide left, whatever it was. That didn't curse them. Mitch Mo on the Sports Hour with Mitch Mo Dallin cursed the Buffalo Bills.
Curse them by picking them to win the Super Bowl. And the Seahawks on the other side, if, you know, that was your other Super Bowl pick, obviously.
Well, yeah, I've owned up to that one already.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up again.
There's no need to.
It's happened. So here we go. But yes, Bills struggling, and again, favorable schedule down the stretch, you know, with three games, Carolina, Atlanta, the Jets, that you would expect for them to be able to win, and then a head-to-head against the Patriots, a chance to even that head-to-head series, give themselves a shot in this division. As far as the Bucks go, Mitch, a big win for Tampa Bay, who gets to 10 wins. They're now tied with the Packers and the Cardinals for the most wins in the NFC, so very much in the hunt for the number one seed. 10-3 on the season. The Bucks are pretty much what we have expected from them. They lost two games there in a row at New Orleans, at Washington, and have reeled off four straight wins after that. They've got two games against the Panthers, at the Jets, and at home against the Saints to wrap up their season. So obviously four games up in the NFC South, they're They've clearly locked that up in that regard. And so really, this is about them and a chance at the number one seed, which Tampa Bay is very much into play. And with their favorable schedule, I believe they have the easiest remaining schedule of any team in the NFL as far as current opponent record. So good spot to be in for Tampa, a chance to lock up that number one seed and a big win against a Bills team that needed a win and definitely gave them all they could handle.
Yeah, I mean, the Bills played him tough, but this is the most complete team in football as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Mm-hmm. They're able to throw the football. They're able to run the football. They play great defense. The most well-rounded, best team in football is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And as much as you want to point the finger at the Bills for not being able to run the football, they lost to the most well-rounded team in football. So you can't really fault them for that.
No, I'm 100% with you there. Mitch, the final game here, Monday night's NFC West matchup, Rams and Cardinals. Rams get it done in Arizona, 30-23. Mitch, this is the question I want to pose for you. These games are separated by a game in the division. Arizona goes to 10-3, Los Angeles 9-4. Did the Rams prove that they're the best team in the NFC West on Sunday? Or No. Do the Cardinals still hold that title?
Cardinals still hold that title. And I mean, I'm not saying that it's not close. It's close. I think that these teams are equally built. I think that they do what they're built to do very, very well. I think that if you play this team 100 times against each other, it might be 51-49. And I don't know who to give that edge to. So, I mean, this does not seem like the Rams have superseded them as the best team in the NFC West. I think that the Cardinals are still the best team in the NFC West. I think Kyler made two very crucial mistakes in the two interceptions, and that cost them the game there at the end. And I attribute that to, you know, lack of experience and just being a younger quarterback, being a little bit more ballsy.
He tries too hard sometimes. And you see that with a lot of the young quarterbacks of his style. Lamar has the same issues, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes has the same issues for that matter. Sometimes they try too hard. They believe in themselves too much, right? I can put this ball there. I can get this ball over that guy. I can make this throw on the run. And when they succeed in that, we praise how amazing these players are and the plays that they make, as we should. But when they make mistakes in those situations, sometimes they can look really bad, like a pick six. And we saw, like you said, a couple interceptions from Kyler in this game that, to me, kind of felt like that. You know, that's pressing too hard. Like and it's great to believe in yourself and that ability. That's what makes these players great. But at times comes with it those sort of mistakes.
Yeah, and there's been plenty of quarterbacks that they learn their lesson with that, right? They learn their lesson by throwing those interceptions. So
you learn what you can get away with and what you can't, you know, trusting your players or trusting yourself to fight another down.
So, yeah, Arizona is just fine. Okay. It's a close race, but, you know, I still got to give the edge to Arizona.
Yeah, the team split their season head-to-head, 1-1. Cardinals won in week 4, 37-20, and then obviously Rams getting it done here. So both road teams win. I think the Rams are the more complete team, Mitch. I was convinced after this win that the Rams are the better team, and I had the Rams as the better team all season. Obviously, we both had the Cardinals making the playoffs, but at 9-8, you know, at the edge of the playoffs, clearly they're in a better position than that. But I still believe that the Rams are one of the most balanced teams in the NFL. I thought they proved that in this game. Matt Stafford, extremely efficient, 23-30, 287, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Sony Michel taking the majority of the carries on the ground, and he wasn't even particularly great, but the Rams just moved the ball so well. Matt Stafford just so good in this offense, and that Rams defense showed up. Aaron Donald, 3 sacks in this game, an incredible performance by Aaron Donald. No Jalen Ramsey in this game due to COVID protocols, so you're missing your second best player on the team in Jalen Ramsey, still able to hold a Cardinals offense that's prolific to 23 points, 10 of those coming in the fourth quarter. So really, for the majority of this game, really just handled this Cardinals offense. And this Cardinals defense that has been improved was, you know, good, but not great. Couldn't get it, couldn't get the stops when they needed it down the stretch. So, I agree with you that these teams are pretty even, all things considered, but I believe that the Rams are a more balanced team and therefore a better team. I think the highs for the Cardinals might be higher when they're rolling, but when things are bad, you know, they can regress back towards the mean, whereas I think the Rams are always an above-average team, may not be special enough to take it over the edge. Obviously, we'll find that out come playoff time. But it was absolutely, you know, a very good game. Cardinals made it, tried to make a game of it there in the fourth. As far as the playoff implications here, as we said, one game separates these teams in the NFC West. 10 wins for the Cardinals, 9 for the Rams, 7 for the Niners, who are 2 games back of them, still, you know, alive in this division race. And as these teams have split, makes the division race interesting if they do end up with the same final record. So to kind of go over the last 4 games, the Cardinals at Detroit this week, home against Indianapolis, at Dallas, home against Seattle. So pretty mixed. A couple difficult games there, I'd say. A couple easier games there for the Cardinals. Pretty mixed. For the Rams, their final 4 games, home against the Seahawks, at Minnesota, at Baltimore, home against the Niners. That's a pretty tough stretch for the Rams. So Cardinals are in a good spot still in the division, but this will definitely be another tight race to watch coming down the stretch.
Absolutely.
In a place where we will likely see 3 playoff teams, you know, with the Niners surging at 7-6 and solid in that number 6 spot in the NFC playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a late surging team that got to keep your eye on.
For sure. All right, Mitch, that's it for the week 14 NFL recap. Let's wrap up the podcast here with our quick picks. We tied last week, Mitch. Both went 9-5, which was really good. I'm happy about that. You know, I like staying tied because that means that I remain up in this quick picks race. 115-76-1 for me, 114-77-1 for you. So just a game still separating us. And we'll see how this week goes. We've got some interesting matchups, a very clear garbage game of the week. That doesn't always happen. So should be a fun one.
Yeah, it should be a good one. This is the best week that I've had in a while as far as picking games. I think I was either at 500 or under for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
That is true. We both went 9-5. That's pretty good. So
that was a good week for us. But let's kick it off Thursday night. Kansas City, they're leaving the state of Missouri. Kansas City, home with some good barbecue.
Yes.
Head over to SoFi Stadium, the City of Angels, to take on the Los Angeles Chargers. Give me Kansas City on the road. This is a team that's continued to play hot. The defense has gotten better. The offense has continued to figure things out. I like Kansas City getting a 2-game lead over the Chargers in this game. Give me Kansas City.
Yeah, a game that has major implications on the AFC West race. Certainly a game that we'll be talking about next week in our weekly recap. 9-4, Kansas City, a game up on the Chargers. This game in LA, Kansas City favored by 3, I believe, in this game on the road. But Mitch, I'm going with the home underdog Chargers.
Oh,
Justin Herbert in the Chargers getting it done against Kansas City. I know Kansas City is one of the hottest teams in the NFL right now. Winners of 6 straight games. The only team with a longer win streak right now, the New England Patriots, 7-game win streak. Kansas City back on track, but this Chargers team they're fighting. 8-5 right now, clearly in the playoff picture, clearly in the mix, but they're still in the mix for this division. And a win here would make things really interesting down the stretch as far as the AFC West race goes. So give me the Chargers shocking the Chiefs and getting the upset win at home at SoFi Stadium on Thursday night. Mitch, we got a couple Saturday games this week.
Yeah.
A little Saturday football action. If you're not watching bowl games or in between the bowl games, catch yourself some NFL football. We're going to start with the Las Vegas Raiders leaving the Death Star in the desert to head to Cleveland, home of the Guardians, to take on the Cleveland. I just had to say it for you. To take on the Cleveland Browns. 6-7 Vegas, 7-6 Cleveland. Browns are favored by 3 in this game. Give me the Browns. I don't like the direction the Raiders are going, losers of two straight after a, I'm going to call it a fluky win on Thanksgiving against the Cowboys. Like, you don't call all those defensive pass interference, Raiders don't win that game. So they are two late game losing streak and a fluky win. That is the last couple weeks for the Raiders. So not trending in the right direction. Meanwhile, the Browns, as we mentioned, a big win last week that they needed to stay alive in this AFC North race. This would be a huge win. So give me the Browns covering on the road, or sorry, at home against the Raiders.
Yeah, the Raiders are a victim of a couple of very tough circumstances that you just can't ignore. And I think that their woes continue. Give me Cleveland at home. I like the Browns to get to 8-6 and continue to compete for that AFC North title. It should be a fairly easy matchup, I believe, against the Raiders that are definitely trending in the wrong direction. Defense has been terrible. We have another Saturday game, Dallin. Two games on Saturday. Merry Christmas. We got two games on Saturday. We have the New England Patriots. They're leaving Foxborough to head over to Indianapolis, Indiana, to take on the Indianapolis Colts. I like the Patriots at Indianapolis on the road. This team is a winner of seven straight. They are really rolling right now. The defense is playing fantastic. The offense seems to be just playing exceptionally high IQ football. I like New England in a close game in Indianapolis.
You know, Mitch, the Colts are favored in this game. -2.5 at home. With the team coming in, as you said, on a seven-game win streak, best record in the AFC. And Mitch, 6-0 on the road this season. Patriots have not lost a game on the road. But I believe they get the first L this week. I'm taking the Colts at home. And the Patriots are a hot team, but the Colts are playing really well of late. They've, with their offensive line healthy, they've been able to dominate on the ground as we expected going into this season with Jonathan Taylor and that stellar O-line. Now that everyone's healthy, gelling, they're playing really well. And I believe Indianapolis makes the AFC race that much more interesting by, Patriots losing a game. Just scrunch everybody even closer. Everyone's going to have 8 or 9 wins next week. It's going to be a crazy time in the AFC. But
I will say,
the home favorites here.
I will say that this was probably the toughest game I had to pick.
Yeah, this should be a great matchup too. This is another game we're probably talking about next week because this is major implications here. Mitch, let's go to Sunday morning and let's talk about a NFC East matchup, the 9-4. Dallas Cowboys head into MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford to take on the 4-9 New York Giants. Probably no Daniel Jones again, I believe, this week. So the quarterback situation, the overall situation for the Giants is obviously very rough. As we mentioned, Dallas thoroughly ahead in this NFC race and probably wraps it up this week with a win. Dallas favored by 10.5 on the road. Give me the road favorites here. Cowboys get it done.
Yeah, I like the Cowboys as well. This is an easy pick here. Giants are not anywhere near what they should be to compete with the Cowboys. Give me Dallas in an easy route over the Giants. Following that game, Dallin, it is garbage game of the week.
This is just hot garbage. Straight hot garbage. You're a garbage person.
Basura absoluta. It is absolute trash. This game, I'm going to flip a coin and just say that Jacksonville gets the 3 wins. I'm going to take Jacksonville at home. Houston, I picked to win one game on the year. They've already already exceeded my expectations by winning 2, but Houston has Davis Mills starting for the rest of the year with Tyrod being benched. I like Jacksonville to get their third win of the year at home.
Yeah, matchup of rookie quarterbacks here. Davis Mills and the Texans headed to the swamps of Jacksonville. Mitch, I'm not picking Urban Meyer. Are you kidding me? This is a disaster. They might waste Trevor Lawrence away in Jacksonville. It is bad. He's baking away in the sun. He's going to be a crispy, fried piece of bacon by the time he's done in Jacksonville. It's not looking good for the Jags. Give me the Texans to get the win on the road. Jacksonville favored in this game by 3. at home. But give me the Texans in garbage game of the week. I don't know who to pick. Does it even matter? They both suck.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Mitch, up next here, we got the 9-4 Tennessee Titans headed to Heinz Field, the city of the three rivers.
The big ketchup bottle.
The big ketchup bottle to take on the 6-6-1 Pittsburgh Steelers. Tennessee favorite in this game. -1.5 on the road for the Titans. Give me the Steelers to get the win in this one. I told you, things are going to be interesting in the AFC this next week. No one's going to have 10 wins. Everyone's going to be at 9 or 8 wins. It's going to be an absolute mess. Give me the Steelers upset at home.
I like Tennessee on the road. I like Tennessee road in the big ketchup bottle against the Steelers.
Donta Foreman, huh? You're all about it. Because it's no Derrick Henry. They have been banged up everywhere on that. That worries me.
I will take a banged up Tennessee run game over a hobbled Ben Roethlisberger.
Fair enough.
Let's do that.
Fair enough.
Following that game, Carolina. They're leaving the East Coast to head over to upstate New York to take on the Buffalo Bills. I like the Bills in this one. I would love to say keep pounding for you, Dallin, but I like the Bills on this one to keep pace with the one game deficit that they have with the New England Patriots. I think that they keep pace. Give me Buffalo at home against the Panthers.
Yeah, Buffalo can't afford another loss this week. Falling to 7-7 would put them in a very difficult spot, especially in the division. But even in the general playoff race, they need to keep pace, and a great week ahead for them as the reeling Carolina Panthers come into town. It's Carolina South versus Carolina North, Mitch. It's Sean McDermott. All these guys used to be in Carolina at Buffalo. Like every single one of these guys used to be as a former Carolina Panther. It's crazy. It's basically Carolina North, and they are much better than the Carolina South. 5-8 Panthers, 7-6 Bills. Bills favored by 10.5 at home in Orchard Park. Give me the Bills, Mitch. I can't pick the Panthers right now. Things are going bad. Things are going bad. Down bad south. And I'm starting to buy into Kenny Pickett to Carolina. I'm starting to buy into Matt Corral to Carolina. I'm saying top 10 quarterback, let's go, baby. Like, let's take the first guy on the board and just do it.
Wow.
That's where we're at in the season for me. It's not a good place. Mitch, the New York Jets, 3-10. Zach Wilson and the Jets head down south to Miami to take on the 6-7 Miami Dolphins. Mitch, after starting the season 1-7, Miami is winners of 5 straight games, had the bye week last week, and now enter the final stretch with a golden opportunity ahead of them with the Jets headed into town. Miami favored -8.5 at home. Give me the Dolphins to get the win.
I like the Fins as well. Give me the Dolphins at home against the Jets. Following that game, the football team, they leave the nation's capital to head over to the city of brotherly love to take on the Philadelphia
Eagles.
Yeah, the Philadelphia Eagles. give me the football team. I like the football team on the road. I think that they stay pace with the Cowboys and continue to be a serious contender for that 7th wild card spot in the NFC. I like the football team in this.
You're taking Kyle Allen, huh?
I'm taking Taylor Heineke because he'll be back.
Okay, he'll be back, and he's going to lead him. All right, I'm not touching Washington this week with the uncertainty there at quarterback. Philly favored in this game -4.5 at home. 1-4 at home for the Eagles, but they get it done here in a favorable matchup. Maybe some luck here at the quarterback position, but Eagles get to 7-7 and take over that playoff spot from the football team. I've got Philly at home, and Mitch, the final game of the morning slate on Sunday. The Arizona Cardinals, 10-3, tough loss on Monday night, but man, great matchup here with the Detroit headed to Ford Field to take on the Detroit Lions. Detroit 1-11-1. Arizona 10-3 on the season, 7-0 on the road for the Cardinals. make it a perfect 8-0 on the season for the Cardinals. -13.5. Cardinals are favored on the road. Give me Arizona.
Yep, Arizona. No explanation needed. Nope. Let's get into the afternoon slate. Cincinnati, they're leaving the home of Skyline Chili to take on the Denver Broncos up in Mile High. I like Cincinnati in this one to keep the AFC North race tight and get a W over the Broncos. Give me the Bengals.
Yeah, both teams at 7-6. Somehow the Broncos are still at 7-6, Mitch. They've sort of just treaded water this season. They are just like, in my mind, they're just a truly average team. Probably going to end the season 8-9, you know, maybe 9-8. They're lucky, but they seem to just be floating around. Right now, they're favored -1.5 at home. Bengals, losers of two straight. They were 7-4 just a couple weeks ago, and it seemed like they were really competing in this AFC. You've fallen flat, but they need to keep pace in the AFC North. So give me Cincinnati on the road, getting it done in Mile High. That thin air is going to help that connection between Burrow and Chase. Let me tell you, he's going to be throwing the ball very deep this week to Jamar Chase. I think that'll help. So give me Cincinnati on the road, getting it done. Mitch, up next, we got the Atlanta Falcons, 6-7, headed across the coast to Santa Clara to take on the San Francisco 49ers. 7-6 on the season for the Niners. Favorite in this game, -9. Give me the Niners at home. This Falcons team is not good. Falcons team is not good. And the Niners are playing very well right now, surging into the playoffs. I feel good about where the direction they're heading. Give me San Francisco.
Yeah, the Niners team is definitely one of those teams on the rise. They're going to be one of those competitors for that NFC wildcard spot. And Atlanta's just not very good. Give me San Francisco at home. Easy pick here. Following that game, Green Bay, they are leaving Titletown to head over to Baltimore to take on the Baltimore Ravens. Possibly without Lamar Jackson, Tyler Huntley under center. I like Green Bay in this one on the road. Got to give me the Packers in this one.
Yeah, got to take Green Bay in this game with the uncertainty at quarterback. It is unfortunate. I'm going to say, Mitch, Thursday night's probably game of the week, Kansas City, LA. But if that was not Lamar Jackson healthy, this has an argument for game of the week, Packers, Ravens. This is actually my preseason Super Bowl pick here, Green Bay and Baltimore. But again, potentially no Lamar Jackson. And if he does play, maybe a banged up Lamar Jackson. This feels good for Green Bay, who is 10-3. And as we mentioned earlier, tied in the NFC for the best record, 10-3, with Tampa Bay and Arizona. We expect both those teams to get wins this week. So, you know, Green Bay got to keep pace in this NFC race. So, give me Green Bay on the road. Mitch, final afternoon game here, an NFC West matchup. The Seattle Seahawks, 5-8, leaving the Northwest, headed down to LA to take on the Los Angeles Rams, 9-4 on the season. Seahawks have to continue to win to keep their slim playoff hopes alive. Rams favored by 4.5 in this game. The Seahawks have been playing better the last couple weeks, two wins in the last 2 weeks. So again, as we said, sort of staying alive here, but I mean, this is a tough test here on the road in LA. Give me the Rams to get to 10 wins and officially eliminate the Seahawks from the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm going to have to bite the bullet here and say that the Seahawks are not making the Super Bowl. So go ahead and give me the Rams this one on the road, beating the Seahawks. Following that game, Sunday Night Football, the New Orleans Saints, they are leaving the Big Easy. They head down to the Bay, Tampa Bay, to take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the 10-3 Buccaneers. I like Tampa Bay in this matchup at home. New Orleans has a ton of question marks on offense. The defense has been, mid-pack at best, but Tampa Bay has absolutely been fantastic, the most well-rounded team in football. Give me Tampa Bay to get to 11 wins.
Well, I would say the New Orleans defense has been better than average. I think they've been really pretty good, and they're the main reason why they're even relevant in this season so far. The quarterback carousel for New Orleans has certainly been unexpected, and now a banged-up Taysom Hill trying to keep them alive in this playoff race. But Tampa Bay, Mitch, at home, favored by 11 in this game. I'm taking the Bucks on Sunday night, but I'm taking the Saints to cover the minus 11. I think this is closer than that. Probably an 8-point game, perhaps. Saints are going to cover that number because this defense is legit. Having Alvin Kamara back is a huge win for the Saints, because when they were rolling Trevor Siemian and Mark Ingram, right? I mean, that's a real bad spot to be in, but at least you have Kamara to rely on now with Taysom banged up, and perhaps you can rely on the run game and a stellar defense to keep you in it. But I got Tampa Bay getting it done at home on Sunday night. And Mitch, that leads us to our final game, Monday Night Football, the Minnesota Vikings at 6-7. They're leaving Minnesota and they're headed to the Shy City, Chicago, Soldier Field to take on the 4-9 Chicago Bears. Minnesota favored -3.5 in this game, trying to keep their playoff hopes alive. Give me the Vikings on the road to get to 500, Mitch. I'm sorry. Justin Fields played valiantly on Sunday night against the Green Bay Packers. I thought he played pretty well, but it's just not going to be enough for this Bears team.
You know, Vikings have played well over the last maybe 6 weeks of the year, have bounced back from a tough start. The Bears have really just had tough sledding. Things are not looking good in Chicago. But it's the Christmas season, Dallin. And I can look for one little glimmer of hope. And maybe if I just ask Santa Claus.
Oh, no.
To bring me a win.
So last week it was Jesus, and now it's Santa guaranteeing wins. What happened last week? You said God wills a victory, and they didn't win.
Did I
so
say
God
that?
Was pranking
I didn't mean,
us.
I don't remember saying that. No. Well,
this
God
time
has
it's Santa.
God
yeah,
does
time
have
it's Santa.
God does have a sense of humor.
Right.
But, you know, let's Santa, come on, bring me a win. You got to be crazy if you think I'm not taking my Bears at home in the Winnie City at Soldier Field. Bear Don, give me the Bears.
Who's it going to be next week, Mitch? Father Christmas? Who's Gary? When they lose on Monday night, and we get to this same spot next week, and you try to guarantee me a Bears victory, whose shoulders is it falling upon next time?
Oh, it'll be Jesus, because it'll be his birthday. So
that's a great point. All right.
I mean,
well, we'll get there when we get there. So I guess Santa, Mitch wishes for a Bears victory for no good reason, because they're not making the playoffs. They don't own their own first round pick. Doesn't matter how they finish in the draft, but that means
it doesn't. Just give me.
You just
good.
Want Justin Fields for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. And the Bears can lose. Doesn't matter.
For my own selfish reasons, let the Bears win.
I mean, you're a fan. You want them to win every game.
Of course I do.
But I appreciate the free win in the picks every week when you pick the Bears. It's good. You know.
Okay. So yeah. Then they'll win this week. Now that you've said that, way to go. Well,
I hope so. I hope for your sake they do, Mitch.
No, Dallin, you've cursed it. Well,
Mitch, that does it for our quick picks. And that actually does it for the podcast. We appreciate you guys sticking around, giving us a listen today. If you don't already, go ahead and give us a follow on social media. The Twitter's at Sports Hour Guys. Instagram at The Sports Hour Guys. The TikTok at The Sports Hour Guys. You can also follow me on Twitter at Lil Thoint. Mitch, remind the people about Anchor.
Anchor is the only way that you can get a part, be a part of the conversation. Go on anchor.fm/the sports hour guys. Leave us a voice message and ask us, ask us any questions that you want. We want you to be a part of the conversation. You know what? You can go on there and leave us a voice message and tell us we suck.
Oh.
Go on there and tell us we suck. Because at least that's going to be, you're now a part of the conversation. And we want you to be a part of the conversation. That is, once again, anchor.fm/the sports hour guys. Leave a question or a you suck comment. Go ahead and leave it at that address. You can go ahead and listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to the podcast. Go ahead on Apple Podcasts and leave us a rating review. Tell us that we suck. Because, Dallin, that's the only way that we can get better.
It is the only way that we can get better. We're really trying. And that's like a sincere desire. You can tell we suck. You've been listening for the past
hour. Did you just listen to that social plug? That sucked. That sucked.
Tell us that sucked. Say, Mitch, that was ass.
Get your shit together, dude.
Oh, man. Well, again, we appreciate you listening and sticking around as always. We love doing this. It's always a good time. Thanks for helping me pass my COVID quarantine with a bit of fun here to record this podcast. We love you. We appreciate you. And we will catch you next week.
Happy anniversary to my father, David, and my saint of a mother, Sammy. See ya.